But I figure one of you should stay with me while you round up the others.
Ryan sent Jack. It was obvious, as the albino knew where the others were situated. While Ryan waited for him to come back with them, he had to sit and listen to Mildred ramble on about anything that came into her head. Truth to tell, he had no idea what she was talking about, and he seriously doubted that she did either. Eventually, she did fall asleep. The other woman was still out cold. It became a long wait. Jack, having picked up JB, was obviously trying to rouse the others rather than have to carry them, and so by the time they appeared, the sun had risen in the early morning sky, and it was set to be another humid, misty day in the swamps. The marsh gases began to rise, moisture pulled from the swamp by the heat, and the sounds of swamp life began to echo around Ryan. Ryan heard the procession through the swamp before he saw it, and when Jack led them to where he was waiting, he was glad to see that JB, Christy, and Doc were showing nothing more than a few knocks and bruises for their ordeal. In fact, he hadn't seen Doc looking so strong since they had left the redoubt, and the old man looked able to take on whatever faced them ahead. Their approach stirred both Mildred and the woman lying beside her. They gathered together, and Jack divided the bundle of belongings he had rescued. There was little left, as most he had distributed as he searched, but JB was glad to be reunited with his ammo and explosives. Searching one of the bags, his eyes lit up when he unearthed his battered fedora. He carefully placed it on his head, as though it were some kind of talisman. They ate some of the self-heats that had been stored in their belongings, and used the remains of the bottled water that had survived the journey. They were surrounded by water, but the brackish liquid of the swamp was an unknown quantity, and they were unwilling to risk drinking it until it was strictly necessary. Over their unpalatable but necessary meal, they introduced themselves to the woman. She wasn't hostile, but by the same token, she found it hard to be too friendly.
We're all on the same road now, so we need to look for each other's backs. No one else to do it. What happened before doesn't matter. Things were different then.
Guess so, if you want to see it that way. Name's Colette, and I've never really done anything except fish. Don't know anything about surviving in swamps like this.
Figure you stay with us. It'll be okay until you find somewhere you want to stop.
Yeah, but where's here in the first place?
JB was on his feet, the mini-sextant in his hand, trying to get a fix on the position of the sun.
That's what I'm hoping I can tell you in a moment. I figure that if we head off to the northeast, we're about 20 miles or so from where we met Jack.
West Lowellton. Wonder if they managed to build the kind of place they wanted. Had a chance when we left. Maybe we'll see.
What are they talking about?
It was before they, found me. But around here is where Jack comes from.
Mildred wondered if this was an ill omen. But there was no time to dwell on that, as they prepared to head out. Jack took the lead at Ryan's behest. The albino was at home in the swamps, and knew them intimately. Any dangers that might lurk from the treacherous ground beneath their feet were well known to the hunter. As they progressed, Ryan became aware that Jack was moving with unease. When they stopped to rest, Ryan questioned Jack.
This feels weird. Not good. Like something bad hang over us. Over all of this.
Christy's doomy sense was usually a good indicator of when trouble was around the corner.
I can feel it, but I don't know what it is. It's almost like an emptiness. It's not the swamp or the animals.
Nothing's wrong there. But no people. Where to hunt parties?
Ryan tried to get a handle on these feelings, translate them into something concrete. Whatever was causing it was also responsible for the apparent lack of human life. There was no way it could be good. But beyond that, Ryan had little notion at present of what it could mean.
Just stay triple red. Be ready for anything.
They continued on for over an hour, with nothing to break the monotony of the march, until Jack suddenly halted.
Swampies, coming straight for us.
What in the hell are swampies?
We met them before. Muties that just won't lie down and die.
Can't we skirt around them?
No. Tricky bastards. They got good instincts, and if the swamps are as deserted as we think, then they'll sniff us out as the only fresh meat in town.
With their weapons drawn, they continued on their way. Colette was unarmed, so Jack gave her a couple of his leaf-bladed throwing knives to use for defense.
They're not much good with these bastards. Just use as last hope. Pray we blow the bastards away.
There was no chance they could avoid the swampies. The muty creatures had scented them and were closing in. It was merely a matter of hoping that the hunters wouldn't be able to surround them. Slowly, they made their way through the swamps, every bird call, animal cry, or sound of moving water holding the possibility of attack. Crossing a narrow strip of marshy grass that weaved an erratic path between two landmasses, surrounded on either side by rush-strewn waters, they could see clearly for several hundred yards in each direction. A half dozen swampies suddenly emerged from the water on either side of them, waves of stagnant, stinking swamp water sweeping over them, blinding the travelers. The muties had been lying in wait, using their enhanced respiratory capacities to stay hidden. They were uncannily silent as they attacked, the only sounds being the movement of their limbs through water. The dwellers in the bayou had called them les morts vivants, the living dead, and indeed they closely resembled the voodoo zombies of legend. But these were very much alive and had only one thing on their minds, killing their prey. JB let fly with a burst of fire from the mini Uzi, catching a thin rangy man across the chest and shoulders, flinging him back into the water. But it wasn't enough to kill him, and he rose again. A well-aimed shot from Mildred ZKR through the forehead took him out. She figured that if they had enough strength to keep getting up, maybe they could be killed like traditional zombies with a shot through the head.
Never thought all those late-night movies would turn out to be educational.
The swampies were carrying machetes and knives rather than blasters. Even the dumb muties had enough sense to know a waterlogged blaster didn't work, so the travelers had some advantage. But the blinding wash of swamp water had given the hunters valuable seconds in which to draw close. Two of them zeroed in on Colette, one from each side of the path, realizing that she had no blaster. They were waxy, their skins covered in sores, and as they reached for her, she was frozen with fear. One of the muties was short and skinny, the other tall with a huge gut. Both were incredibly strong, and taking one arm each, began to tug at her. Their combined strength was ripping the muscles in her arms, pulling her shoulders out of their sockets. Her knives fell uselessly to the ground. There was little help for her. Christy, Jack, and Ryan were using their hand blasters to fire on the swampies, trying to get them in the head each time, other shots proving little more than a delaying action. The swampies were on the path, grabbing at the travelers who kicked out, trying to stop them closing their vice-like grips about their arms and legs, dragging them into the water. JB took the M4000 from his back and let loose a load of barbed metal flechettes that took out one swampy by severing the top half of his body almost cleanly from the bottom. Doc, too, had dealt with one swampy in this manner, using the Lamaze shot chamber to equally lacerate a swampy who bore down. But the ancient percussion pistol had only one load of shot. As Doc was reloading, he was dragged down by a swampy. The creature couldn't wait to take a bite from him, and he felt its fetid breath as its head came toward him, the dull eyes showing nothing of its imminent triumph. The old man twisted his arm and wrist so that the Lama was going against the swampy's temple, then fired. Colette was down, her arms useless. The swampy with the huge gut decided to end his tussle with his compatriot by using his machete to hack her in two. The shot from JB's M4000 reduced the mutie's neck and shoulders to bloody ribbons. And suddenly, it was over. The travelers stood, exhausted by the struggle. They were covered in blood that was both theirs, their opponents, and Colette's. The woman was dead, and there had been little they could do to save her. The corpses of some of the swampies lay on the path, while others had sunk into the swamp, claimed by the waters from which they had sprung.
Dark night. We didn't repay her too well.
Well, if you can't take care of yourself, you shouldn't be out here.
Pausing only to clean the blood from them as best as possible, and slipping the corpses into the water to cover their tracks for any other swampies, they continued on in subdued silence. When the sun began to fall, they were still some distance from Lafayette and West Lowellton, farther than they could make in the daylight left. There had been no sign of any other life, nothing to suggest that the swampy hunt party had been little more than a bunch of rogue scavengers. The random nature of the confrontation did little to improve their collective mood. The companions set watch for the night as they pitched camp. It was a fitful night's sleep for all. The following day they would reach West Lowellton, and then they might have a better idea of just what was happening in the bayou.
Far be it from me to be the one who wishes to cast a pall over the proceedings, but I have a feeling that all is not well. Indeed, there is something rotten in the state of Denmark.
Where?
Forgive me, John Barrymore. I quote from an old play. Something from the days long before the nuke cost, and something that I forgot you would have little or no knowledge of. It merely means a distinct chill in the air, and one that has little to do with the weather.
For now, it was morning, and the sun blazed in a sky momentarily free of chem clouds or skittering rain, dappling through the leaves of the trees and swamp plants that grew taller and provided a canopy to the swamp. It was already warm, despite the fact that the sun had only been up for a short while, and before midday, it would be sweltering. But as Doc had said, the chill had little to do with the weather. He and JB had drawn last watch, which had enabled them to get an unbroken rest before having to rise and stand guard over their companions. Ryan had wanted it that way. He knew that the old man had suffered more than the others from the rigors of the journey, and was in dire need of an uninterrupted sleep. And JB was the obvious choice to stand sentry with Doc. However, as the two men stood a little distance from the camp, watching the less nocturnal animal life of the swamp begin to stir and go about the business of staying alive, JB was regretting standing sentry with the scholar. The old man was inclined to go off on strange tangents.
If you're saying what I think you're saying, Doc, then I agree with you.
And what, pray tell, do you think I may be saying?
Doc, this isn't the time to be funny.
Very well, John Barrymore. If you wish me to articulate in a more concise, and indeed a less verbose manner, though one would take umbrage at the very notion that one was as such, then I shall. There is an air of gloom that hangs like a shroud over this swamp. It weighs down upon us, and has since we landed. It has nothing to do with the manner in which we arrived, and nothing to do with the chilling of our newfound companion, though, to be truthful, that was regrettable. No, it has nothing to do with our own experiences, though I would wager that they have not helped. It is all around us. The creatures seem subdued and afraid, scuttling in the shadows. Tell me, the last time we were in such a land, did we not fall prey to attack from hunting animals? Where are they now? And as for people, swampies, you would expect to be oblivious. They are little more than brainless muties who have only their basic motor functions. But where are the people? Not only have we seen nothing in the way of hunting parties, but we have seen little sign that there have been any around. Consider this. Have we seen any signs of snares or traps? And those very creatures who have ignored us thus far, have they shown any sign of fear? No, sir, they have shown nothing. There is something very wrong, and it ails my spirit as it ails theirs. I have nothing to prove this but a great sense of foreboding.
J.B. had nothing to say to that. All the things that had been bothering him had been voiced by Doc. The lack of human habitation, or signs of it, was something that was a temporary bonus. They were all exhausted, their journey from the redoubt having been nothing but constant, unrelenting hardship. So in many ways, the lack of human opposition was some kind of respite. And yet, they knew from previous experience that this was an area of habitation, and so that very lack was also a sign that greater danger lay ahead.
Doc, I reckon we're all thinking this, but we don't really have much choice but to go on.
My dear John Barrymore, I am only too well aware of this, and of the need for us to be ever more vigilant. But I am sorely worried about this one thing. If we have no knowledge of that for which we must be vigilant, how can we know that we have seen it? The dangers may not be apparent until we are already in the middle of them. For all we know,
we may be in the middle of them right now.
Doc merely nodded. There was nothing more to say, and their watch was broken by the sounds of the others stirring in the early morning, as the warmth of the sun penetrated the depths of the swamp. Returning to the main camp, Doc and JB elected by unspoken mutual consent to say nothing of their conversation to the others. They were both sure that it was what everyone else had been thinking, particularly now that they had the time to stop and consider. Best to see what would happen. Besides which, it seemed as though Doc and JB hadn't been the only ones to voice their fears in the dark watches. There was a subdued atmosphere in the camp as they broke their fast on self-heats, taking advantage of the ease of using the supplies, rather than waste energy at this point by trying to hunt. They drank the last of the bottled water, knowing that now they would have to find less brackish water in the swamp. To counter the hardship of the past few days, they also swallowed salt tablets that Mildred distributed. There were few left after their trek through the desert, but she gambled on the hope that they wouldn't be needing any for some time now that they were in the swamp. When they had finished, they broke camp and set off in the direction of West Lowellton, on the edge of Lafayette, not knowing what they would find. Despite their weariness, they remained sharp on their trek. Yet there was nothing to give shape or substance to the feeling that hung over the swamp. It was an uneventful journey through the swamp, hacking past the plants and the trees, treading carefully to avoid the patches of treacherous quicksand and the foot-rotting puddles of stale and stinking water, trying to keep on solid and dry ground. Before the sun had reached its zenith in the still, clear sky above them, blazing through the cover of the foliage to raise mists of humid water, they found that they had reached the area where the swamp had been hacked back by the developers of the 20th century, and man had sought to conquer the elements. Since the original New Cost, the swamp had been unable to gain back much of the ground lost. The survivors made sure of that.
Keep it close, and keep it frosty.
They broke the cover of the swamp and began to encroach on the remains of West Lowellton. Keeping in formation and moving slowly from the cover of one building to another, Ryan took the lead and scouted a safe location before the others followed in single file, each waiting until the other was safe before continuing. From what they could recall of their previous visit, the outskirts of the suburb were mostly deserted, marked out into territory by graffiti tags. Back then, the main baron in these parts was named Tourmont, and he ruled with an iron hand. A giant of a man, he had a sec force to match his personality, and yet he had been unable to subdue the locals led by Jack's father, who the Baron had killed. It was this event that had led Jack to joining them on their journey, leaving the people and their vill behind. West Lowellton was Cajun territory, and anything outside had been Tourmont's, with this area the buffer zone and a combat course. Now it was silent. There was no sign of any life at all. Even if the Cajuns had been able to move from their self-imposed exile and back toward the area where Tourmont had previously held sway, there should still be some signs of life here. There was the old movie house where they had avidly watched the few remnants of old celluloid that had survived the nuclear winter.
Jack, you know this place better than anyone.